and welcome to this episode of Ann Arbor AF, a podcast for folks trying to figure out what's going on in Ann Arbor. We discuss current events in local politics and policy, governance, and other civic good times. I'm Jess Lita, and I'm here with my co-host Molly Kleinman. We both use she, her pronouns. We're your co-hosts to help you get informed and get involved. It's your city. Let's jump in. Today, we're talking about the next city council meeting coming up Monday, February 7th. We'll be touching on a few interesting agenda items, including transit-oriented zoning, deer, and that damn bridge. And we'll offer some ways for you to get involved. A quick process note, we record this a few days before the council meeting, which means there will probably be some changes to the agenda between now and then.
And speaking of the agenda, we're also going to not talk about the agenda a little bit today, I think. Molly and I each have a wee bit of a rant that we wanted to share with you listeners, but we're going to start with the agenda. And the first thing that I wanted to start with were mayor communications right at the top of the agenda, specifically MC1 and MC3 commission nominations. And I am super excited to see that the renters commissioners are being nominated this week. So fun to see those come forward. And the reason that there's two items on the agenda is that the second one is to allow permission for what's called non-registered electors, which are folks who are not registered to vote within the city of Ann Arbor. In general, folks who serve on commissions are required to be registered voters within the city of Ann Arbor for a lot of good and maybe mediocre reasons, but there's a stipulation in the city charter saying if you have permission from council, you can make an exception to that. I think ICPOC has an exception to that, and now the Renters Commission does, which is great because we've got some folks from IPSI in there. So delighted to see that in. The Renters Commission was formed by resolution at council in September of 2021. So apparently it's taken a few months to do outreach, get in applications. I took a look through the names, some I know, some I don't. It feels like a good balance of genders and backgrounds. I'm looking forward to seeing how they develop their bylaws. And I'm really hoping that they see their way to removing the non-voting landlord seats. I don't know if that has to be done through council as a resolution or if that's something that they could do through bylaws. But anyway, good job, Renters Commission. Excited to see you guys move forward and say renter things. Yay.
Awesome. All right, so the next thing, this is actually on the agenda. We don't have any memos this week, is DC1 resolution on deer management to resume funding for vegetation studies and consider resuming funding for regular population management. So the reason we are talking about this agenda item, it's not sort of the kind of topic we go into very often, is that I think I've heard a lot from people, and I think maybe Jess has as well, the question, what is the deal with the deer? There are yard signs, there are bumper stickers, there are people on both sides who feel very, very strongly about the deer, specifically whether we should be culling the deer population for reasons of both safety and ecosystem, or whether we should be not culling the deer population. And historically in Ann Arbor, culling the deer population has meant killing deer. We bring in sharpshooters into the parks, and they kill some deer, and that helps control the population. And there are people who think we should definitely do that and maybe even do more of it. And there are people who think we should not. The question sort of got sidestepped in 2020 during pandemic belt tightening. The funding for the deer cull was reallocated to other higher priorities, which I think made a lot of sense at the time.
I'm actually going to disagree with you. It wasn't necessarily higher priorities, but other priorities.
Other priorities, fair enough. It was reallocated. But that was only going to be a temporary dodge. The thing about the deer is that no matter what council decides, there are people who are going to be very unhappy about it. Neither Jess nor I have any particular dog or deer or wolf in this fight.
I can't not say this. It's not near or dear to our hearts. Just throw the tomato now. It's fine. Do not encourage this. Anyway.
That was amazing. Thank you, Jess. And now we're done talking about deer.
Let's talk about land.
Yes.
All right. Next thing on the agenda that we're talking about is a council member resolution with very grand title. It's a resolution to provide a report on the 68 parcel of land in the proposed TC1 zoning district, including ownership and valuation information. What this resolution is asking for in English is for staff to pull together a report on the owners of 68 parcels of land. And Twitter, I hear you that you're sad that it wasn't 69. We are all 12 and I'm here for it. But 68 parcels of land contained within what's called the Transportation-Oriented Zoning District, also known as TC1, to evaluate how much that land value is going to increase based on this zoning change and to write that up as a report due to council by the end of next month. This came about because last week, Planning Commission unanimously approved TC1 as a new zoning designation. And I say unanimous, one commissioner did recuse themselves from the vote based on a professional conflict of interest. So it was however many, like 8 yays and 1 crickets. But anyway, there's been a ton of conversation about this, a ton of community engagement, unanimous approval, and it's going to be coming to council soon for approval.
And to be clear, this was approval of applying TC1 to these 68 parcels, right? We already, TC1 as a concept, we already approved.
Correct. And I don't think it's actually applying it to the parcels. I think it's applying it to those specific corridors, the transportation corridors. And then the parcels are either contiguous to or affected by that zoning.
Okay.
Or contiguous to or affected by those corridors.
Okay. But it's just a section, like it's not, these corridors are at State and Eisenhower, and mm-hmm. it's not all of State or all of Eisenhower, right? It's just—
Correct. And it's not all over the city. They're part of the community conversation over the last couple of years about the transit-oriented zoning designation was, should we define it by corridor type or by, you know, traffic volume type or something like that? So basically, are we saying a corridor looks like X, and anything that looks like X gets this zoning? The community expressed concerns about creating this new zoning district everywhere. And so the solution proposed, and that is on its way to being adopted, is instead of doing it everywhere, it's being proposed specifically, as Molly said, at State and Eisenhower. And there are 68 parcels of land that are affected by this designation right now. Does that answer your question, Molly?
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay. I saw the nodding, but I just wanted to check in. Based on the language of the resolution, it seems like there is a concern that there will be some quote unquote winners from this zoning designation. But to me, this feels like a tactical reaction to something that's probably a more strategic concern. So if what we care about is equitable wealth increases, that's difficult to impossible to manage through zoning. We live in a country whose primary mode of wealth generation, when it's not your parents giving you money, is owning land, specifically owning homes, but owning land. And so if you don't want people to benefit from changes to land, the answer is not don't make changes. The better answer is give people a lot more access to a lot more avenues of wealth creation, whether that's jobs, whether that's universal basic income, whether that can look like a lot of different things, many of which are not regulated at the local level. I kind of wanted to draw in the show The Expanse to this because it's difficult for me to not talk about that show. It's a really good show. If you like science fiction in space and coffee, you would probably like this show. I love it because it is a universe populated by complicated politics, complicated characters, and powerful women. Like, and I don't mean powerful in the sense like everybody's got a tank. I mean powerful in the sense that they know themselves. They know how to leverage relationships and systems in order to be able to make big galactic level change. It's exciting. It's fun. It's cool. It's also very fraught. There's a lot of explosions. That part doesn't apply to the transit-oriented zoning. No explosions. But there is a lot of talk of and actions around revolution. And let me just be clear, there are no spoilers in what I'm about to say, but for those of you who are watching The Expanse or considering it, I want to point out that there are two revolutionaries that are held up kind of in dialogue with each other. No lessons given, no morals made, but the viewer and the reader of the series is kind of given the opportunity to consider, well, if I'm doing a revolution, how would I do it? One of them, Kamina Drummer, represents this feeling of I am going to help the people that I'm here to help. And I don't care who it helps collaterally. Like if it helps people that I'm not super a fan of, I don't care. If it helps my people, that's what I'm here for. And Marco Naros, and again, like there's no spoilers here. These are really, really clear character traits given very early on. Marco Naros has this feeling of, I am going to hurt my enemies. And I don't care if I hurt the people I care about. As long as I hurt my enemies, I will have accomplished my goal. Honestly, this feels the same way. Like this resolution isn't about tending to folks that we care about. It's about hurting the folks that we don't, which is landowners, which is developers, which is who, you know, whatever the proxy is for the bad guy in this situation. So I have some reservations about this. To me, a much more interesting question, not specific to this resolution, but specific to the transit-oriented zoning, is who is this benefiting? Is it transit riders? Is it renters? Is it hourly wage workers or young parents? Just like in general. Another issue I have with this specific resolution is an elected official requesting public resources like staff time doing research into specific property owners feels icky.
It is icky. It's like it goes, it is icky. That's not just a feeling.
Okay, great. So it's objectively icky.
Yes.
And it also feels like a slippery slope to something dangerous. The resolution itself notes that the information is publicly available. So, okay, fine. Like do that research on your own time. And then use that information to determine whether policy action is needed. But this intermediary action is kind of not okay. I don't ever want us to use policy to go after specific people. I want us to talk about how our policy is benefiting groups. And that is not what this gets at. Erica Briggs is one of the two council members for Ward 5, one of my council members, and she's also, we'll talk about this a little bit later, also liaison on the Transportation Commission. Erica puts out a weekly or a biweekly newsletter on policy and general community issues that I enjoy. Erica, thanks for your newsletter. It's always informative. She talks about this resolution, and one of the things that she says is there are important reasons that we do not consider who owns a property when making rezoning decisions. If council and staff were to investigate who owns a property before determining whether to grant or pursue a zoning action, it could lead to discriminatory or preferential actions. And I think that that's important language to pay attention to, is not just punishment, but discrimination. Is that what this is getting at? City planning staff provided a memo in response to, I think it was Councilmember Briggs asking some clarifying questions around this resolution. And they indicate that increasing density along transit corridors is a top priority, and it's called out in several of the city's master plan elements, including Vision Zero, including A20, including our non-motorized transportation plan. So increasing development density furthers most, if not all, of the goals in the community and the land use and access themes of our sustainability framework element. So what we're saying is this action accomplishes a bunch of our goals. I wanted to say one more thing about this. We've talked just the teeniest bit on this podcast about concierge council, an idea called concierge council, which is what it means when elected officials respond to constituent requests kind of on a one-off basis, like, oh, I heard from X that, you know, something feels really confusing or painful or awful to them, I'm going to introduce a resolution on that, whether or not it has anything to do with a broader community concern or problem. So that's concierge council. It's typically characterized by, I'm going to say, wasting staff time. This feels like the flip side of that. This feels like attack council, where we're not serving specific constituents, we're going after specific constituents. And both are a big no thanks from me. So TL, DR, DC3, no thanks.
Yep. Okay.
Speaking of no thanks, Molly, what do you want to talk about?
Here we go. DC4. I'm reading you the whole title. It's got many parts because it's like
so exciting.
It's like a nesting doll of things.
Let's do it.
DC4, resolution to amend R-21-395, approving a professional services agreement with DLZ Michigan Inc. for engineering design services for the East Medical Center Drive Bridge Rehabilitation and Widening Project. This damn bridge again. You have heard me talk about this bridge at so much length. I'm going to let Jess get it, like, do the catch up, because I have been talking about it so much that I am now struggling to keep it concise. And then we'll get into it.
I have a few issues like that where people ask me a short question and like one encyclopedia entry later, they're like, look, I had to go to the bathroom for like half an hour.
I'm the gif of that guy with the board and the arrows and the pins and the strings and the, like, that's the point that I've gotten to with this bridge. So Jess.
Amazing. Okay. So the issue on the table started, I'm going to say, relatively straightforwardly. Last fall, the state of Michigan cited this bridge as requiring repair. The bridge and road are city right-of-ways that front the university hospital. The university and city are planning to cost share the repair. So far, so good. While we're in there, the U is requesting that the bridge also be widened. This is when the community hijinks began. The request came to council in the form of a resolution to approve the design contract, which Molly referenced in the title above, for the engineers who are going to draw and write up the plans for this project. At the council table, the resolution was amended to require that any new space from the widening be dedicated to multimodal use, specifically bikes, buses, and pedestrians, and then referred to Transportation Commission for review and discussion at the end of last year. And so far, what we're looking at is a process working as it should. This was a complicated issue, and they asked for, you know, the folks who really have skin in this game, Transportation Commission, to do a more in-depth analysis of what's being asked. Transportation Commission, of which Molly currently is chair, did review and discuss. They ended up not approving the designs as submitted by the U. So it's now back to council for a vote and discussion about whether or not to keep that amendment, which Molly will talk more about in a moment.
Right.
Is the specific decision up for discussion today is there's a resolution to remove the multimodal amendment and say yes to the widening of the bridge with the current, and Molly has added a note to my note, bad design plans. Molly, right. Did I catch it?
You got it. So awesome. The thing about the multimodal plans is that when Transportation Commission had two meetings where we talked about this, and at the second one, we heard from staff that a high occupancy vehicle lane or bus rapid transit lane on the bridge is not feasible because those are meant to be parts of much longer corridors. And we're talking about really a very short bridge. So those are not options. And the other multimodal pieces, the walking and the biking pieces, did not get incorporated into the designs in any way because the university doesn't want them. So this resolution is to take out that the multimodal piece and then approve the widening. Why are we talking about it today? Because the design is still bad. In this plan, all of the widening space goes to private cars. We have talked at length about why widenings are bad. So I'm just going to sort of focus in on the fact that this project, as currently written, would violate the city's climate goals and our safety goals. Part of the issue is that the university has said, they've just said it, we plan to bring many more cars here. We're going to build more parking. We're going to build more hospital. And we are inviting lots more cars into this space. And like, they can do that, but we don't have to be helping them. We should not be helping them. They're saying they want more car traffic and they're going to build for more car traffic. And they want the city to go along with that. And we have absolutely no reason to do that.
No reason to do so, and a really good reason not to, which is in our own carbon neutrality plan, A20, one of kind of the primary focus goals in that is to reduce vehicle miles traveled. So driving in single occupancy vehicle cars is the biggest kind of culprit in that by 50% in the next 8 years. That's a 2030 goal. You guys, that is major behavior change. And every step we take going in the opposite direction makes that harder.
It's an ambitious goal. And this project is in direct opposition to trying to achieve that goal. when what we could be doing is widening that bridge for protected bike lanes and expanded sidewalks so that we're actually making it more comfortable for more people to make the choice to bike or walk or take the bus to the hospital area, which, yes, some of that traffic is patients, but a ton of that traffic is staff. A ton of the traffic moving through that space is students who are just passing through from Central Campus to North Campus and have nothing to do with the hospital. There are so, yeah, it's, this is where the hands begin to wave and I get mad again. So there are things we could have done to make it better, because that intersection right now is crappy. Like, it's bad as is, it's bad. And repairing the bridge and keeping it exactly the same as it currently is, was not, that would not be my first choice. I don't think that would have been Transportation Commission's first choice. Widening the bridge to make it better would have been amazing. That's not what's happening. I'm pointing to Jess.
Yeah, I wanted to call out. In over a year of doing this podcast, I don't think I've ever brought up Councilmember Erica Briggs' newsletter. And today I'm going to do it twice. But frankly, it was kind of fire today. So I deeply enjoyed the newsletter. She had a comment on this resolution. And as a council member and also a council liaison to the Transportation Commission, I really pay attention to kind of her observations about the process. So in her newsletter, she says, "I reject the premise that we should approve a substandard project design that is in conflict with our transportation and climate action plans, as well as the university's carbon neutrality plan. Our priority needs to be on rehabilitating this bridge, which is in poor condition. If the university wishes to widen the bridge, then it needs to fund a project that improves conditions for all users in an area that is known to be both dangerous and uncomfortable to navigate. I will be offering amendments to this resolution on Monday night."
Yes. Yes, Erica, like, exactly. This, she said it all nice and clear. This is great. So there will be some amendments to this resolution on Monday. And it may be that those amendments get us to something better. The problem is that thus far, U of M has not budged on any of the requests that we've made for improving the experience for pedestrians and bikes, for making space for transit. They only want to make space for cars, and they only want to pay to widen the bridge as much as they need for cars, and then they're done. So I'm excited to see these amendments. In the meantime, this would be a good thing to write to City Council about, because my sense is that there is a lot of wrangling going on, and I am not currently going to make a prediction about the outcome. This is an opportunity to really potentially move the needle by taking a few minutes to write to Council. There are a few different things you can ask for, and I'll give you a list of those, but the really key thing, the most important thing, is that the plan as it is right now is unacceptable. And if the U of M does not relent on any of these things that we're asking for, and they try to get us to move forward with a widening plan as it currently exists, council has to reject the widening and move forward with just the repair, which they're prepared to do. And the U of M is going to pay for half of that repair no matter what. So we don't have to worry about them taking all their money and going home. We can just repair the bridge with 50% of that coming from the U and stop there. That was what was in the city's original plan before U of M came with this widening request. So some things you might ask for would be requiring protected bike and pedestrian facilities on both sides of the bridge with sufficient space for both bikes and pedestrians on both sides. One way to do that would be to widen the bridge even more. And U of M could get their lane, which I still don't like, but we could get really improved facilities for everybody else. Bridges are really hard to change. Whatever we do with this bridge, we're going to be stuck with it for a long time.
I just want to point out that you're Kamina-ing the bridge and you're not Marco-ing the bridge. You're not like, no cars forever. You're like, look, as long as bikes and pedestrians benefit, you can have your freaking car.
Yes, it's true. In principle, I love to yell that we should ban cars. But in practice, I understand how politics works. And I'm willing to support a compromise that would get me something that I want. There's another big thing that we want with this project, which is a connector to the border-to-border trail, which goes under the bridge, and an underpass that would connect to it. The border-to-border trail is a really important piece of bike and pedestrian infrastructure, but it's piecemeal right now. And this would be a really important connection point. And there's right now a plan to like build a platform where the trail could go, but we could actually maybe get the trail in there sooner. And that would also be great. And it would potentially help reduce bike and pedestrian traffic on the bridge. However, I always have to say, anytime you're taking pedestrians off of grade, removing them from the street and making them go over or around or under, that's car infrastructure. And that's not preferred. But not getting it at all would still be worse. So again, compromise. Another one would be if they put in that extra lane and they do use it for cars, to say eventually when Ann Arbor is ready for what's called signal priority, which I explained last week, it's this idea that buses and traffic lights can communicate and the light can stay green. So buses can move more quickly through a corridor, and they can sometimes you put in a queue jump lane so that the bus can jump the line at a red light, and you could use that lane. That's the one thing we did hear from AAATA that might someday be a useful application of an additional lane on that bridge, would be a bus queue jump. So to say when AAATA is ready, this is going to become a queue jump lane. This alone is not enough, I don't think. And I still believe that once you give space to cars, it becomes really difficult to get it back. And so also it would mean accepting that the intersection is going to get worse before maybe someday possibly being less worse. So I don't love it, but again, like there are some things we could use that space for that would be beneficial. Currently there, if we widen the bridge, we would get none of those benefits. And so I think it's worth potentially asking for some of these things, depending on how big you want your asks to be. You've got these options, but no matter what, if we don't get anything, they have to say no to the widening. The other thing about this is that this is still a conversation about the contract for design services. So we're still pretty far from like the actual building of the bridge, but this is when this conversation is supposed to happen. Like we're having this discussion at the right time. This is where we make this decision, but also just, this is still the design contract. That's where we are with this damn bridge. Jess, did you have anything else you want? Yeah, go ahead.
I hear what you're saying, but right, like you're saying, right now is the time to have this conversation. Like we're defining the scope of the contract. I said in the last episode, I went back to our conversation about this from, I think it was December 18th or something like that, the episode that we did. And I noted in that episode, because I'm smart and look forward to things, that even 6 months down the line would be too late to have this conversation. And that's feeling very true. Like pretty much you can always amend a contract, but it's difficult. And especially given how hard the university is fighting any language around widening being dedicated to multimodal uses, even potentially conditionally in the future, maybe someday, I don't know, like they want none of that language in there. And so, yeah, now is definitely the time to have the conversation. It does feel weird to fight this hard when there's not even like lines on the page, but words are the easiest thing to change. So I think we're having the right conversation at the right time. I appreciate the work that you and Transportation Commission are doing. I appreciate the work that our advocates out in the community, folks who bike and walk, and especially folks who are in this area all the time, they've been really critical of the widening because that area is already, dangerous is a good word, but uncomfortable is a better one. Like I was there a bunch last year. My partner had a bunch of health issues that put us at the hospital a lot. That road, that intersection, those sidewalks are not great. And I have extensive critiques of the bike parking over there. That's for another conversation. But anyway, all of that to say, we're having the right conversation at the right time. And I do encourage you, we love to say, get informed and get involved. Now is a really good time to email your council members, your thoughts about this particular resolution, and just let them know what you'd like to see. And I'll say now's a good time to dream big. So ask for the nice things.
Yes. So that's it for the agenda today, but we have a couple more sort of key things we wanted to talk about. And the first one is related to this conversation about this bridge. And that is that I am so tired this, I have put so many people have put so much time and energy into this one bridge, fighting for these core values like safety and sustainability, these things that we say, we make these lofty goals, we put out these big plans, and then we have to fight for them one intersection at a time. And that feels like shit. Like we can't keep doing it this way. We will burn out everyone who cares, or they will leave. We have to get to a place where we can have these kinds of policies and procedures and practices so that like things like road widenings and slip lanes are not like, those aren't just treated as like neutral stuff we do. While at the same time, like if you want to remove a single parking spot, it's like months and months of battle and probably you'll lose. I want to like passing these transportation plan and the A20 plan, like passing those things were step one. But like, and I don't have the answer for how we get to somewhere with our policies and procedures such that advocates on the ground can be fighting for bigger, better things and not just trying to like maintain the shitty status quo. Like I am fighting for that bridge to stay bad.
That's right.
That's not how I want to spend my time. Mm-hmm. Like, so I wanted to put this out there that what this bridge fight is exemplary of a larger problem. And I think this is not just an Ann Arbor problem, right? This is an everywhere problem, but we cannot go on like this.
Good rant. There were a lot of hands there. I like it.
Yes. So that's that. I just had to say that today because I'm just so tired. And then Jess, you have also a rant.
I do. It's a little bit different. I really appreciate, I do want to pause for a minute on your critique, you know, especially because we talk a lot here about we criticize and then we bring solutions or we make suggestions. We are walking walls of opinions. We always have suggestions. But I appreciate the critique that you're making. And I do agree that fighting so hard for what feels like crumbs or at the very least not going backward, it's not who we say we are as a right. community. It's not how we want to think about ourselves, but it's definitely like practically how it plays out. So I appreciate the criticism. For me, it's a little bit less about process and more, I had a language rub a couple of weeks ago and it really kind of burrowed under my skin. And I was like, man, if only there was a place where I could talk about infrastructure peeves.
I have a podcast for that.
Full of people who listen and also have infrastructure peeves. So y'all, here's one of mine. I'm thinking about municipal sidewalk maintenance. You know, we've had this dump of snow the last few days, but just in general, like it's winter. And so the conversation about snow removal and doing it equitably and do we do it municipally or privately, you know, whatever, it's a conversation. In the last couple of months, we've been having a conversation about what would it take to do it municipally. And by the way, big ups to the listeners on Twitter, I think, who took our back of the envelope math dare on how much development it would take to pay outright for municipal sidewalk snow removal. That was a fun exercise. Thanks for doing that. But the thing that I keep coming back to is that we describe doing it as expensive. And I have a body reaction to that. I'm not a hand waver like Molly is, but like I get the chest heavies. And I want to talk about what the logical extension of that statement means, what we're saying when we say that's expensive. In this country, we rarely pay the real cost of anything. For housing, as expensive as things are, we are not paying the real price. We underprice energy, we underprice roads, we absolutely underprice parking, we underprice most of the labor that it takes to build anything. Mm-hmm. For food, we definitely don't pay the real cost, and most of that's labor. And for sidewalks, we are not paying the full cost of what it takes to own them. We've built them over time, and we have allocated X dollars in the budget to maintain them.
And we have said that the hard parts of maintenance belong to adjacent property owners. What we're saying when we say that is that sidewalks are not infrastructure. We're saying that basically it's a property amenity. What we're also saying when we make that budget decision is that good enough, quote unquote, is defined by able-bodied people. That budget item assumes that whatever percentage of people of our community's residents are able to use the sidewalks is good enough. And the rest of them, oh, well, it's expensive.
Right.
To do it right isn't expensive. That is the cost of having a sidewalk. To do it badly is ableist and a cop-out. So you guys, specific to sidewalk maintenance, but this is going to pop up in other conversations too, I don't want to dwell on why it's hard or expensive. I really don't. Like, absolutely, let's name the barriers for sure. And then let's spend the bulk of our energy and time and attention on solutions, because that's how we care for each other. That's how we care for each other.
Yep.
And that's why I don't want to say that sidewalks are expensive. I don't want to do, we've said it on this podcast before, okay, and I had a little like twitch about it, but I don't want to do that anymore.
That's, I think that's totally fair. Yeah. Cause I definitely said it. And I had that moment when I saw the top price tag for doing all the sidewalks. I was like, woof, that's expensive. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. A lot of money. I absolutely agree with you, however, that it's not, that's not a good reason not to do it. Mm-hmm. It's one of multiple barriers, but it's so important. And yeah, there, you know, feel like this is a very frequent meme that I see where when business owners complain about minimum wage increases, and it's the response is, if you can't afford to pay your staff a living wage, you can't afford to run a business. Like, figure it out, because that's, otherwise you're just stealing from your employees in the form of their time and their bodies and their lives. So I think this is another very good example of that. Like, I like the way you framed it, that this is the cost of having sidewalks. This is the cost of being a city.
Good rant, Molly.
Yeah, you too, Jess.
Moving on to, I'm not going to say that those were unpositive, because I actually like critiques. Critiques make me feel like we are genuinely taking on stuff that we care about. But going on to compliments, let's say, I've gotten a couple of pieces of listener feedback since the last episode, and I just wanted to say thank you. So to the folks at the university's Bold Challenges workshop this week who told me that you listen to the pod and find it useful, thank you. That was really lovely to hear in the middle of like my first professional outing in a large room in 2 years. I had a lot of anxiety and feelings about it. And so to know that there were people on the other side of this podcast listening and caring and finding it useful, that was just really lovely. Thank you also to the listener who let us know that you put us on when you can't sleep. And I actually don't even care whether you listen to pass the time or you're using it to fall asleep. I do not care. From one insomniac to another, I am just glad to be part of your middle of the night coping strategy. Thank you. In terms of community things, the Ann Arbor Community Academy, which is sort of like Civics 101 run by the city of Ann Arbor, the applications are open. I was just taking a look to see what the deadlines are. And in the past, it's been a competitive application. This year, it's open to everybody. So if this is something you're interested in, I highly encourage you to apply. Applications are due February 18th, and we'll drop a link in the show notes. And finally, the ARPA Funding Community Priority Survey is up. So ARPA, of course, is the American Rescue Plan Act. These are the dollars that have been assigned to different municipalities for being able to kind of recover from this pineapple that we've been in for freaking ever. Ann Arbor got assigned some in the neighborhood of $24 million. Yep. And the survey, I actually really like the format. It's really interesting.
It gives you...
Right?
It was like a really well-designed thing. I really liked it a lot. It was fun.
Yep. So there's a way the city gives you a series of priorities and says, if you were to budget the dollars, how would you do it? And it also gives you, you know, an open field to be able to say, oh, I didn't see the thing that I care about. Here's what I wish you did. So fill that out. That's due by 12 a.m. on February 14th. So make the city your Valentine and tell them things about dollars. I feel like there was something that I wanted to say about that survey, and now I can't remember what it was.
Well, we have some things that we think that you should choose on that survey.
Would you like to name one or two?
I mean, I think it will be very easy to spot them. They are things like affordable housing, mm-hmm. and Vision Zero, mm-hmm. and unarmed crisis response. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to leave you with those three. And let's say maybe you drop a few dots for those ones, and then you can pick the other stuff that you care about.
Protected bike lane, Miller and Catherine. That was exciting.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And also there's something that has a name that sounds very unclear, and it's about funding for trying to get people out of poverty. Universal basic income.
Universal basic income. Yes.
Yeah, I could start giving you my whole list, but I'm stopping now. I'm going to stop.
So if you haven't already, please respond to that survey. Again, we'll drop a link in the show notes. Molly, I think we hit the agenda and all of our housekeeping. Yeah, she's giving me the thumbs up. Okay, that is it for this episode of Ann Arbor AF. Thanks for sticking with us, you guys. Come and check out our episodes and transcript at our website, annarborAF.com, and keep the conversation going with fellow Ann Arbor AFers on Twitter at the A2 Council hashtag and Facebook in the Ann Arbor Humans Who Want group. And hey, if you wanted to send us a few dollars at ko-fi.com/AnnArborAF to help us with hosting, we always appreciate it. We are your co-hosts, Jess Lita and Molly Kleinman. And thanks again to Scott Trudeau for stepping in this week to help produce. Our theme music is I Dunno by Grapes. You can reach us by email at AnnArborAFpod@gmail.com. Get informed, then get involved. It's your city.